It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 70 from downtown Sydney. And oh my goodness, there's been so much going on in the world. Let's begin with this three items that came on the BBC News earlier this week.
This opinion piece is a direct attack on Jeremy Corbyn, his treatment of Jewish parliamentarians, and the party's handling of allegations of anti-Semitism. It's exceptional. It's highly significant as an intervention by the leader of a religious denomination during a general election campaign.
So just tell us a bit more about what the chief rabbi
actually says. A landslide victory like this is going to give an immense pressure to the government that let them know that the people are still with the movement and people are still support universal suffrage, because we believe that is the only way to safeguard prosperity and stability in a city, that is to have a fair democratic system. And I think this is an important message to Beijing.
An meteorological organization revealed that levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have reached another record high. Statistics collected over 30 years suggest that rising concentrations of carbon dioxide, methane and other greenhouse gases are driving the severity of climate change. The WMO Secretary General Petteri Tallas pointed out that the biggest polluters used to be Europe and North America, but China's now taken the top slot because of its reliance on coal. The president, Xi Jinping...
Okay, first I want to just mention is climate change. We're going to come back to that again. But I think the astonishing statistic for me was that even if Europe managed to cut its emissions almost totally, within 3 years, China would have made up for that. So, you know, there's a whole range of different factors in here when we're talking about looking after the planet and the weather and so on, and what's causing all this and how we can deal with it. Another situation that was mentioned there is also Hong Kong. And the astonishing news from Hong Kong is that the pro-democracy protesters, they wiped out the pro-Chinese government forces in the election. I think it was 90% almost. Now, whether it makes any difference, because these councils have little or no power, I'm not sure. But you would think that the Chinese government would have to pay attention to it. And the other interesting news that's just in is that Donald Trump has signed a bill that's come to him from Congress, in which they are expressing support for the protesters. Now, the Chinese government will not take this well, and the impact of that may be that it will stall the ongoing trade talks just now. But for me, the most astonishing thing this week has been the intervention of the chief rabbi. Now, the chief rabbi does not normally intervene in a party political way in elections. But such is the nature of his concern for his community over the possible election of Jeremy Corbyn, that he directly intervened. And it did have and has had an astonishing impact. Now, this was made 10 times worse for Jeremy Corbyn because of this interview. Listen to this with Andrew Neil.
Wouldn't you like to take this opportunity tonight to apologise to the British Jewish community for what's happened?
What I'll say is this. I am determined that our society will be safe for people of all faiths. I don't want anyone to be feeling insecure in our society. And our government will protect every community.
So against no apology.
Against the abuse they receive on the streets, on the trains, or in any
so
other,
no apology for
in
how you
any other
this.
Form of life.
And, try one more time.
No,
no
hang
apology.
On a minute, Andrew. Can I explain what we're trying to do?
You have, and you've been given plenty of time to do it. I asked you if you wanted to apologise.
Andrew,
and you
I
haven't.
Don't want anyone to go through what anyone has
and
gone through.
And you've said
through.
That several times. I understand that, Mr. Corbyn. I was asking you about an apology. Let's move on to Brexit.
Well, okay. A couple of things to say about that interview. First of all, I'm not sure I would ever want to be interviewed by Andrew Neil. He's way and above the best interviewer that I've ever heard. why he's polite, he's strong, he doesn't let the politicians away with things, but he's got a phenomenal stack of information and he's an intelligent man. And if you want to, I would suggest that you watch his interviews. All of them are worthwhile, but I think particularly the one with Nicola Sturgeon, which is something she was not used to, and the one with Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn's one especially was an absolute train wreck, and not least in his comment, in his refusal to apologize to the Jewish people for the anti-Semitism that does exist within the Labour Party, also exists in individuals within others, but the difference with the Labour Party is this, is it appears to have become institutionalized. Just, it was astonishing television. Let's move on and let's consider the sad subject of abortion. Now, first of all, let me say something about the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania who has vetoed a ban on aborting Down syndrome babies. That itself is an astonishing statement. Down syndrome, as I think most people will know, is a genetic disorder associated with physical growth delays, distinct facial traits, and often intellectual disability. It is a disability. But one of the unusual things is, as the American Journal of Medical Genetics found, 99% of people with Down syndrome describe themselves as happy, and only 4% of people, of parents with children with Down syndrome, express regret about having their children. Now, I've known several couples in this position. I've known several Down's children, and I wholeheartedly understand and agree with that picture. In the United States, 67% of babies who are diagnosed as having Down syndrome are aborted. 77% in France, 98% in Denmark, 90% in Great Britain, 65% in Norway, 100% in Iceland, and 95% in Spain. Tom Wolf, the Democratic governor, has vetoed a bill which would prevent people just killing their child in the womb just because they have Down syndrome. It is discriminatory, it is disablest, it is wrong. But something else that's also wrong. Listen to this from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby.
People going to abortion clinics, whatever you think of abortion, they're human beings. You could say they're doing the wrong thing, you could say they're doing the right thing, you could say it's their right, you can say that the baby has rights. The Church of England is very clear on this. I won't get into the detail of that because we're running out of time. But the Church of England has a very clear view on that and had since the 80s. But how do we love the people who are going there, treat them as human beings and value and respect them?
Now, at one level, if you don't think about it, that sounds great. We have to love people. The question he's being asked is about around abortion centres, should people be allowed to protest? Should they be allowed to pray? Now, let's be very careful what we're saying here. We're not talking about people yelling at people, and we're not talking about violence, and we are not talking about abuse. So what are we talking about? We're talking about people who would meet to pray. We're talking about people who may hold up banners and so on. Now, Justin Welby is saying the CV is clear on abortion. Well, I don't think it is, actually. But the CFE official position anyway is that to take the life of the child in the womb is taking the life of a human being, and it's opposed to taking the life of human beings. So how is it loving and how is it respecting people to allow them to take the life of their own child? Or at least to encourage them to take the life of their own child, or at least not seek to discourage them? I don't think that's loving. I find the Archbishop's concerns here are he's defining love by the parameters of what our society says. Now, he is a Christian preacher, and what he's supposed to do is not echo the culture, but challenge it when necessary. Yes, it's important to love people and to respect people, and I would do that. But I'm not sure how you do that by arresting or prosecuting people for praying outside an abortion clinic. And for the Archbishop of Canterbury to endorse that is really quite amazing. And here's something else that's amazing. Google and Facebook. Now, here we come to Australia. And there was a smartphone app developed by the Georges River Region's John 3:16 mission. And both Google Play Store and the Apple App Store decided that they would ban this. And what did it do? All it did was share John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him would not perish but have eternal life. Now, eventually, Google allowed the app, but Apple wouldn't. And they rejected it with three different reasons. This is the last reason. This is the one that got me. They said that John 3:16 would have no lasting value. Yeah, as opposed to things like the Candy Crush game, which clearly have lasting and eternal worth. Now, this culture of banning and censoring is something that is ongoing within our culture. So an old professor of mine, Donald MacLeod, who not in any sense could be considered remotely right-wing, wrote an article, ironically, about censorship and the gender confusion. And a part of what he said was this: whether history will survive our generation is a moot point. But if it does, our successors will look back on us as an age that pronounced all truth to be relative and then proceeded to demolish primal boundaries and sow confusion. Confusion between right and wrong, sheep and goat, boy and girl. Has this produced greater tolerance? Ask Mr. Cameron, the suspended minister of Scotstoun. This was the case, by the way, we covered in a previous quantum. But back to the Church of Scotland. Will they now, for the sake of consistency, A, suspend all ministers who share his views on homosexuality, and B, place the writings of St. Paul's on their index of prohibited books? Or will they at least allow him to have his say? And for writing that, here's the irony. Talking about intolerance and people not being allowed to speak, Donald MacLeod was banned on Facebook. Not just that post, but his whole domain was banned on Facebook. And here's something else that's a bit unusual, an honest politician, if a somewhat confused one. Christine Jardine, the Liberal Democrat Foreign Affairs spokesperson, speaking on the BBC.
Human rights should apply to all of us, to every single person in this country, and we should respect, we should respect the rights of those individuals, whether they are trans women, whether they're trans men. And yes, I think if someone is identifying as a woman, is living as a woman, then I think we have to respect that, and we have
really?
To give them.
So, yeah. So I mean, that's a plainer answer, frankly, than I've heard from a lot of other politicians. You think, even when it comes to, for instance, a women's refuge, that someone who self-identifies as a woman, even if they are anatomically male, they should have access?
Well, ask yourself why they're at the refuge. I mean, if someone has gone to a refuge
for help... Well, that's the point. I don't know. They might be at the refuge for all sorts of reasons. And that's the point that a lot of feminists make. We don't know.
If someone has gone to a refuge for help, if someone has gone to a refuge because they have been abused or physically or emotionally, then they deserve our help. And I think we have to look at this from a different perspective. We've got a long way to go on dealing with gender recognition and, for want of a better expression, getting our heads round the whole scale of the understanding that's involved and the whole scale of dealing with transgender issues. Now, at our conference this year...
It's unusual because at least it's an honest answer. She's basically saying that the Liberal Democrat policy is to allow men who identify as women to go into women's refuges, who self-identify. So if I am a man who has been abusive to women and I decide that I am a woman, according to Ms. Jardine, I am entitled to go in there. And the horrifying thing about that interview is what happened there at the end, because her justification for this came straight out of a naivety and a fantasy that's just astonishing. What do I mean by that? She said, well, what if that man, who says he's a woman, is going to the woman's refuge because she, stroke he, has been abused? Well, abused by who? Abused by their previous wife Or have they been in a homosexual relationship? What are they talking about? Why are they going? That is a very good question to ask why they are going. And the naivety of Ms. Jardine is this, is to assume that because someone is going to a women's refuge, the only reason they could be going is because they themselves are seeking refuge because they have been abused. She does not allow for the possibility at all of someone going with other motives. That is naive and dangerous. That's like me saying to my daughter when she was 8 years old, yes, dear, it was wonderful that that man in the park, 50 years old with a long raincoat, he offered you sweets and he invited you back to his flat to play games with him and to give you lollipops. Well, isn't that great? Aren't human beings wonderful? The only reason he wants you to do that is because he's lonely. And so on you go, sweetheart, you go and play with that man. That's the insanity of that position. But Ms. Jardine is not to be outdone. The ACLU, they've come up with something. This is their tweet. There's no one way to be a man. Men who get their periods are men. Men who get pregnant and give birth are men. Trans and non-binary men belong. International Men's Day. We live in a world where intelligent people can seriously say men get pregnant. And we may laugh at it, but that's a world which ends up causing a great deal of harm. So I received, and I received many of these, but I received a message this week which was particularly poignant from a woman who's talking about how things have only got worse. This is in my home city of Dundee, where her oldest daughter is expected to get change for gym in front of a boy who says that he is a girl. This is the kind of state-sponsored, state-sanctioned child abuse that's occurring in some of our schools. But we're not done. There's a really, actually quite funny spoof article in the Spectator US. Finally, the transracial community are gaining recognition. It's quite funny, but it's quite sad because it reflects something that is actually happening. Let me just read this. Since 2012, I have publicly identified as wrong skin. To those ignorant of this term, this means I was born white, but I identify as black. Sorry, I'm smiling. It just the whole article is actually quite funny, but sad, as I said. I'd kept my race dysphoria a secret for many years, but it had become increasingly difficult to hide. Being the transcendental trailblazer I am, I decided to come out and I was strongly ridiculed. I decided to come out and challenge the bigotry of cis-race people. Predictably enough at the time, it was regarded as nonsensical and I was strongly ridiculed. Today, however, transracial individuals are finally being seen. According to the UK's Telegraph, the Universities and Colleges Union, mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, has stated that regardless of skin tone, people should be able to identify as black. Their position says the following: our rules commit us to ending all forms of discrimination, bigotry, and stereotyping. UCU has a long history of enabling members to self-identify, whether that is being black, disabled, LGBT, or woman. When questioned further, a union spokesman confirmed that the UCU considers it is up to individuals to choose which ethnicity they wish to be recognised as. Whoa, there you go. You can choose, according to British academics, you can choose whatever you want to be. So, as I say, I'm going to self-identify as a 5'5" Chinese woman. Genius, millionaire, does that work? Can I be whatever I want to be? Let's change. And let's see if you recognize this theme tune. Okay, now here, I've got a puzzle here, and if you are a Christian and you know the theme tune, and you know the theme tune because you watch the show is Game of Thrones. And I'm asking, why watch it? I think I watched about 5 minutes of it once and thought, no, I'm not going to watch this. It's full of horrendous sexual violence, particularly against women. And there's a story that's just come out about a woman, Emilia Clarke, an actress, who, in the Game of Thrones, her character was brutally raped. And she's recently been discussing this and saying how terrifying she found the nude scenes, but particularly this. this rape scene. And she says her co-star, who was raping her, also found it terrifying. She says that doing the nude scenes was so dreadful, she drank vodka and cried to get through it. Whatever I'm feeling is wrong, I'm going to cry in the bathroom, and then I'm going to come back and we're going to do the scene, and it's going to be completely fine. He was crying, Clark says, her co-star, more than I was. When she pushed back on doing nude scenes in later projects, the producer said, no, you don't want to disappoint your Game of Thrones fans. So let me ask you this, if you're a Christian, why are you watching this? And why are you putting an actress through this for the sake of your titillation and your pleasure? That doesn't make sense to me at all. Okay, let's see if you recognize this piece of music. And this is to introduce a story about electric cars. And just something that I'd grasped here in New South Wales, but also that I picked up in an article in The Guardian, which I put a link to. Now, there's been a large-scale study commissioned by the Austrian Automobile Association, OAMTC, and its German counterpart, ADAC. And what they found is that a mid-size electric passenger car in Germany must drive 209,000 kilometers before it starts outperforming the corresponding diesel car in terms of CO2 emissions. But most electric cars only do 180,000 kilometers. So in actual fact, when you get an electric car, you're doing more emissions because what it costs to produce the battery and the car puts more emissions into the atmosphere than actually driving a diesel car. The EU has a regulation which means, and Germany has this as part of its government, that if people are not driving electric cars, producing or cars that are producing emissions, they're going to be fining them like several thousand pounds a year. Companies are going to be fined several thousand pounds a year. But this is back to the thing about the diesel. It used to be that the EU was kind of mandating people to drive diesel, and then it all went wrong. And now they're mandating us to take electrical, and it's based on fake science. It's false. It's wrong. The research doesn't go along with that. So, you know, again, when we're talking about the climate change stuff, it's not as simplistic as saying, well, we'll just go vegan and drive electric cars. Maybe let's turn to something a bit more positive. There's a church here in Sydney that is a good church, Parramatta Anglican Cathedral, and they have used Kanye West's new gospel-themed album, St. John's Anglican Cathedral in Parramatta, to hold a Jesus is King pop-up concert. David Auld, who's a good guy, love David, he's a senior associate minister at the church, told the local TV news that he loved it because he finally found a Kanye album without lots of explicit language. I listened to the album when it dropped and I loved it, Old told the newspaper. Well, you may think that's a bit of a strange outreach, but listen, this is a really good church, and they held a service a couple of Sundays ago where there were 900 plus people and 35 baptisms. I believe they have an Iranian congregation and a Chinese congregation as well. Really quite remarkable, and good to see that they are using Kanye and others to proclaim the gospel. Okay, we're going to finish. If you want to support Quantum, feel free to do so on the Podbean. Please continue to let me have news and feedback. It's been great to get quite a bit this past week. Please continue to share it. But we're going to finish. We're going to go back to Gary Newman. And his song Cars, and we were talking about electric cars. Here's the one they did with Tubeway Army called Our Friends Electric. There's a man outside. And we'll go out with a quote from Animal Farm and see if you can guess which political leader in the UK I'm referring to with this, or perhaps other political leaders in China or America you might choose. This is George Orwell from Animal Farm. Quote of the week: friend of fatherless, fountain of happiness, lord of the swill bucket, oh, how my soul is on fire when I gaze at thy calm and commanding eye, like the sun in the sky, comrade Napoleon. Thou art the giver of all that thy creatures love, full belly twice a day, clean straw to roll upon. Every beast, big and small, sleeps at peace in his stall. Thou watchest over all, comrade Napoleon. Do not trust in princes or politicians to give you all that you need or all that you desire. God bless you. See you next week.